for a cookie, being like, I know maybe this cookie isn't gonna round out my diet, but it's what's gonna bring me joy.
Sicily is an island with a sweet tooth. Corrado has pastry in his jeans.
Pastry in his jeans? That's not okay. That's not sanitary at all.
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you can watch the stuff you love when you want, where you want, on whatever device you would choose. I'm Tom Merritt, and of course, the way I know that Brian Brushwood is the right co-host for me is his mind went to the same joke mine did.
Yeah, that was on the fly as well, because that was picked out by our fantabulous producer extraordinaire, Mr. Bryce Neshcom Castillo.
Hi.
What was that?
That was the trailer announcement for the new Netflix spinoff, Chef's Table Pastry.
So Chef's Table was, man, I got to tell you, this is outside my wheelhouse.
Sure. Chef's Table was, I think, Emmy award winning, a documentary about restaurateurs all around the world. Very beautiful. It was from one of the guys who did Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Oh, right on.
Episode was a different chef.
Yeah. Each one is a different chef, and it's all about their life and their outlook. And so this one's all about pastries and desserts. It's a little loose with the word pastry.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Sure.
If anyone's a chef, and I actually know that there's at least one chef in our audience, if you could explain, does pastry just generally refer to dessert in the culinary world? Because they're showing gelato and the song I Want Candy. And
yeah, it's maybe a little confusing, but that's
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like it was originally called like Chef's Table Sweets or whatever. And then they're like, sweets didn't taste or test as well as pastries.
It didn't taste as well.
Yeah, it didn't test as
also,
well as pastries.
That pastry's been in his jeans.
But I believe that's coming in April. So keep an eye out for that on Netflix.
All right, let's get into the primary target. So Reuters just found some documents, fell off a truck, I guess, showing internal numbers from Amazon, including graphs and charts that they use to determine how valuable the shows they do on Amazon Prime Video are. It indicates that more than 5 million people joined Amazon Prime by early 2017 in order to watch TV shows. So they brought people into the free shipping and all the other stuff that they do in Amazon Prime because of their TV shows, to the tune of 5 million people. The internal documents also indicate Amazon's total U.S. audience for TV is about 26 million. That's about half of Netflix's Q1 2017 subscriber number, if you want to try to compare apples to apples. The Man in the High Castle had 8 million U.S. viewers by early 2017 and attracted 1.15 million new Prime subscribers worldwide. Now, they don't make it clear how they arrive at this number, but in the documents, Amazon estimates that the cost of Man in the High Castle and the number of people they can tell who came to Amazon to watch it means that each new subscriber cost $63 because of The Man in the High Castle.
So
it's $99 a year. That's a pretty good deal.
I mean, especially it means it's a profitable deal, but it's probably profitable given that most people, once they get into the Prime ecosystem, they never get out. It's like a black hole. Who gives up Prime on purpose once you've swallowed that bitter pill?
Which is good for the folks who made Good Girls Revolt, which ended up, according to their math, costing $1,560 per customer.
Well, and this
a show
is,
which got canceled, by the way.
I mean, this is basically a CPA model, right? This is, rather than pay out a cost per acquisition as a bonus to podcasters or for YouTubers or whatever, they just say, well, let's create our own content and let's figure out a way that we could trace, which content is bringing in acquisitions to our $99 a year product, because those subscriptions, man, once you get in, you don't get out. Like, I remember, I don't know that these are exact numbers, so please don't think I'm giving inside knowledge, but I remember hearing in the early days of Netflix sponsoring a whole bunch of podcasts and television shows that they were paying $70 bounties for people who signed up to Netflix. So that's a CPA of $70, whereas, like, so that's even more than what it was to spend all that money for The Man in the High Castle just to attract people into your ecosystem.
And this is also relative to price. The Grand Tour was cost $78 million to produce that, just that one.
But it's season. Also the number one show on the planet as a result.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and so they're even. They had a cost per acquisition even smaller than $63 because of that. A lot of people are looking at this story and they're talking about the 26 million number, or they're talking about the five, you know, the 1.15 million new Prime subscribers worldwide, et cetera, et cetera. I think the most interesting is that cost per acquisition, because a lot of people look at what Amazon's doing from the outside and they think, well, wait a minute, they're spending how much on the Grand Tour, how much on the Man in the High Castle, just to get people to pay for shipping? Like, that doesn't make sense. They spent millions and millions of dollars and it only cost me $99. This kind of numbers is gives you a look behind the curtain as to why it makes sense for them to do it and why they'll cancel a show. They'll cancel a show because that show is not bringing people in the door. They want shows that make people come in, sign up for Prime, watch that show, and then stay.
So this is weirdly, strikingly similar to what we are doing at Scam Stuff and The Modern Rogue right now. And I do not intend this to be a plug, although it certainly is. Traditionally, what happens with content makers is they're like, let me make my beautiful art. Let me know that an audience loves it. And let me find a bunch of intermediaries, a broadcast network to foot the bill for it so that they can sell it at a increase in price to soap manufacturers who wedge in ads to it. But now the soap manufacturers want to have a say in the content and all that stuff. What we've been doing with The Modern Rogue is, like, we want to attract people to our ecosystem. We want to talk about the cool stuff that we have for sale on the site. And then just like, if you like the stuff, buy some stuff. If you like the content, then buy some stuff and we'll make more content for you. So this is a case of them doing essentially the same thing on a macro scale. It's efficient because you don't go through so many intermediaries. You basically attract the audience to buy into the ecosystem.
And this is why ratings per se don't matter, right? We talk a lot about Netflix and, like, why won't they release their ratings? Because Netflix doesn't care about ratings. They have their own version of this, of this show brought somebody in and they stayed this long. That show's a success. This show, maybe it's a show you like, didn't bring that many people in. They didn't stay that long. We're cutting that show. That's why a lot of times people are like, well, why would Netflix ever cancel a show? Because it always brings somebody in. They've got math like this. And it's not the same, obviously, because Amazon has the whole, you know, world's largest retailer behind it that they're funding with this stuff. But I think it is a cool thing to look at and understand, oh, I get it now. This is why Amazon might cancel a show, because it doesn't move people down the line. And I know most of you probably had a vague notion of that. But it is interesting to see a number attached, like, oh, Man in the High Castle was only $63 per user, per new user. So, yeah, me as a current user watching it, I don't matter as much as that new user that comes in, except that I didn't cancel Amazon Prime. So, you know, I count a little bit.
Yeah, well, and there is something to be said for you have different vectors. You have the popularity of the content. You have the artistic merit of the content, which leads to a depth of association to the content. So, for example, Man in the High Castle, well, that's a popular one. Let's take a lesser popular one. Let's picture one that costs around, with a CPA, cost for first stream of, like, a Mozart in the Jungle or a Bosch or whatever.
So Mozart season 2 was $508 per user for first stream. Bosch season 2 was $790.
Right. So in those cases, they may be worth doing, just because maybe they know that artistically it's going to pay off in a later season, and that people will be more inclined to stick around in the ecosystem just to wait for the next season, because you're not going to cancel your Prime and then sign up again when the next season comes around.
Yeah, Goliath, I think, is a best example of what you're talking about, because season 2s always have a higher cost because, well, people generally don't make it to season 2 right away, right? They come in and start watching season 1. So Goliath season 1 was just under $500 per, but, like you say, keeps people around. That eventually pays off.
5 years. 5 years, yeah. You're telling me?
Five years, just for the fee, but probably faster because they're like, oh, well, I've got free shipping. I will order these socks or whatever.
Yeah. Man, I the only question left in my mind is, why would Reuters not even say where they got this information from? Because they are speaking with a lot of confidence in this article and give no indication.
Oh, no. Reuters says we have internal documents, right? So they don't have to say how they got the internal documents. Okay. All they have to say is these are official Amazon internal documents. It's not a source. It's somebody gave us these and we verified they really did come from Amazon. And of course, Amazon's not talking. Where they found them.
Is there any benefit to Amazon leaking this?
Oh, sure. Purpose? Yeah, there might be. There's all kinds of reasons I could imagine why someone at Amazon might leak it. Maybe they're in a negotiation and this could help push it over the line, but they don't want to actually officially give it out because then everybody will want it. You know, like, I don't know. There could be all kinds of reasons.
Yeah.
Or it could just be, you know, disgruntled employee. Who knows?
So what's funny is knowing that all of this content is being created essentially by a vertical mega corporation with the, think about it this way. All of this content is part of a corporate conspiracy to cause you to spend more money at their stuff, which on the one hand sounds ominous. It's also how all of television works for the past 60 years.
There's a corporate conspiracy you may not be aware of. Those little short films that they show in between the main show are meant to make you buy things.
Exactly. Oh, those hilarious vignettes about cartoon characters wiping their butts. That's so they can sell more toilet paper.
It's funny. I'll be watching a show that Eileen's not that interested in, and I'll get to the commercial break. And I'll start to fast forward, and sometimes she'll be like, "Oh wait, I haven't seen this trailer." Like, not interested in the show at all. But there you go. However, you know, one way to even boil this down simpler is to cut out everything between us and you, and just say, "Hey, if you get value out of this show, just give some value back."
That's a nutty idea, Tom. It'll never work. Give one example where that's ever worked for any artistic venture ever.
Let's see, an artistic venture that wanted to last, I don't know, 4 years, just talking about cutting the cord. Got me. I can't.
Well, we're out of time on that segment. Guys, if you want to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. You're keeping us loud. Wait a minute, Tom.
Hold on.
You guys are keeping us loud, live, and independent. You transformed our lives about 4 years ago, and we can't thank you enough.
No, we can't. But you can thank us for supporting the show. Please.
Become one of our bosses. Yeah. And I guess also we're also, you know what? We're like the best of Netflix and Amazon because we accept money directly like Netflix. But then we also sell you stuff like Amazon that we directly benefit from.
We don't sell you stuff.
You're says the person about to launch a book announcement later in this episode.
Cord Killers We is Netflix. Modern Rogue Tom Merritt book writer are Amazon.
There you go.
Those guys.
Sounds like a conspiracy. That's a conspiracy to conduct a business.
They're
conspiracy
crazy.
To conduct business.
All we want from you is your money. So please help us out at patreon.com/cordkillers. Don't forget, too, the movie draft is coming up March 20th on Night Attack. NightAttack.tv, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern time. We will be conducting the summer movie draft. Brian.
Yeah, man. Breaking news. This just in. We now have our slate of six individual teams. You want to run them down for us, Bryce?
Yeah, we're going to have, of course, Team Night Attack. That's Brian and Justin Robert Young. Team DTNS, that's going to be Tom Merritt and Sarah Lane. Team Tell It Anyway, this is Jenny Josephson and,
the other one.
Matt
Flanagan.
Matt
nailed it.
That's right. Team Cord Killers, which is of course Christy Cates and Malongo AE. Team Amtrekker, which is going to be Brett the Roundsville Amtrekker. Brett the Amtrekker Roundsville.
Yeah,
there we go.
No, I like that one too.
and John Teasdale. And of course, late breaking news.
It says here Team 6, but I like the idea of calling it Scotch Team 6 for one C. Robert Cargill and a co-captain
and
to be named
partner
by
to be
tomorrow.
Named later. Yeah, that's right.
Scotch Team 6.
So that's going to be happening on Night Attack during our normal Night Attack episode, or in place of a normal Night Attack episode tomorrow, Thursday, if you're watching this live, or check it out on the Night Attack feed, nightattack.tv, to get that RSS information.
Excellent. All right. Let's talk about how to watch. Hey, so it's been a while since I was able to just get a new piece of hardware and put it through its paces. And this Friday, I got the Channel Master Stream Plus. This is Channel Master, the maker of the subscription-free DVR, the maker of a nice antenna, giving you an Android TV. So it includes the TV tuner. that they would like you to hook up to a Channel Master antenna, but you can hook it up to any antenna. But it's also got Android TV, so you can get apps like HBO Now, PlayStation View, Sling TV, etc. So I set it up. If you want to use it as a DVR, you can. It's just using the default Android Live TV app, which supports DVR recording. You'll have to put an SD card in, though. And when I first set it up, the only SD card I had around was 4 gigabytes, which meant I could record 32 minutes of material. I finally went out and got a 128 gig one. That gives me a few hours. So that works fine. I've tried it out. Worked great. The DVR is a little clunky to use. It's not hard to pick something out of the guide and choose to record it, or even choose to record an entire series that way. It's a little harder to search. Search was funky for me. It didn't always work. And I could not, for the life of me, figure out how to record a show that was currently airing. Like, there's no record button on the remote.
So you could tune to a currently airing show, not meaning that it's still on the air in the general sense, but the specific sense. Like, right now you're watching it. There was no easy press record button.
Yeah, so if I go into the guide interface, which, by the way, it's free. Like, I don't have to pay like on TiVo. That's great, and it works really well. I could see everything that was airing. I could go like to something in the future, click the center button, and it would say, "Oh, would you like to record this?" And I'd say yes. If it was currently airing, and I click the center button, it just said, "Oh, you want to watch that right now? Here you go." And I couldn't figure that out. That's not the end of the world, but it is a little bit funky. Also, the Google Play Store does not have all the apps, particularly doesn't have Netflix. So I don't know if that's Channel Master needs to upgrade its firmware with DRM.
I wonder if, I mean, that's so significant. It makes me feel like that is a on purpose decision for some reason.
Yeah. But other than those two little niggler, well, Netflix is kind of a big deal for some people. They need to get that. But other than those two things, for the most part, I found it very, very appealing, very easy to use, super easy setup. Because I have an Android device, I could just go log in on that Android device and like hand over all my account information and authorize it. And moving about between apps and the TV app itself was super easy. I was able to watch some PlayStation View stuff and then go right back into live TV. So if you're looking for something that can handle live TV, DVR, don't want to pay a monthly subscription fee, and have a little bit of an app selection, like I could get HBO Now, like I said, you could check that out. It's $149. I paid $99 because I pre-ordered mine, but if you buy it now, it's $149, and they're taking about a month or two to ship, I think.
How snappy was the interface? Was it as fast, as smooth as an Apple TV or Roku or
Yeah. It was definitely as good as the modern Roku or Apple TV. The interface is the Android TV interface, which I find kind of halfway between Roku and Apple TV. Roku interface leaves a lot to be desired, in my opinion. It works, but it's not beautiful. The Android TV interface is a little bit better. It can be unmanageable if you have a ton of apps, but then so can the Apple TV with the way it goes in a columnar situation. What I love about Android TV is it would keep video playing when I went back to the home screen to choose other apps. So I didn't lose, like if I was watching sports or something like that, I didn't have to leave the video.
And so it does have a voice feature on there. Like,
yeah,
can you issue nested commands like record so-and-so show, or you just have to say so-and-so show and then it finds it and you have to press the record button on it?
Yeah, it really only worked. As far as I could tell, it really only worked with the search. When you went in to search something, it would be like, oh, just say it, and which was nice. You know, you can just say it. But it wasn't doing Google Assistant stuff where I could be like, launch PlayStation View and go right to my favorite show or anything like that.
Yeah. You know what? Actually, I should have put this down. I'm not more much of an audiophile, but I recently went and reset up all of my Sonos devices, which meant I finally properly configured my Sonos play base. That's what it is. The thing you stick under the TV that is supposed to work with the subwoofer and other speakers and all that stuff. And once I fixed my router so it could actually reach it, it was shockingly easy. And the the tuning app was really interesting because it told you to walk around with your iPhone. It said, number one, take your case off your iPhone. Number two, flip your iPhone upside down. Three, look at this video. You see how this lady is doing this weird dance, moving the iPhone up and down all around the stuff? You have to do that for a minute. While late, and what's funny is I did this after the kids went to bed. So it just starts going like, pew, 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 choo, choo. And then, and so my 5-year-old is like, Dad, what are those lasers? And I'm just like, shut up, kid. Now I got to start it all over. Because
I'm calibrating the Sonos. Quiet.
Exactly. But I'll report on how much I noticed that tuning, because we have a really echoey living room, and I'm hoping that tuning will make that a little bit better.
Excellent. Well, there you go, folks. We'll have links in the show notes if you want to check out the Channel Master, or just go to channelmaster.com. It's easy to find. Let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
Not like here to stay. It's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
Bryce, I know this is one of your faves. Terrace House Opening New Doors is the new season. It's been airing weekly in Japan since December, and it's now back on Netflix internationally with the first 8 episodes. They're doing them in chunks. Mm-hmm. The series returns to Japan in an upmarket resort town near Nagano. Remember, last season was in Hawaii.
Hey, yeah. Tom, tell me if you remember our Achilles, a scant 3 or 4 months ago.
Our year-end recommendation show.
Guess what was the one thing Bryce told everyone to stop caring about?
I know.
Was Terrace House.
Aloha State. I dug into Opening New Doors this past weekend, and I all 8 episodes just like in a row. I binged it. It's great. It's The Verge article here has got it right. It is a return to form. The cast is great. The fights, the awkwardness, the romance, and the tender. Oh my God, it's so good. and it seems like with Aloha State, at least they figured out the workflow so that episodes would come out pretty regularly. It seemed to be about every 3 months you would get a new batch of about 8 episodes. And it's really cool. I actually just found out a really cool thing about Terrace House, if I can get just like a minute to nerd out about it.
Sure.
So
Go for it. It's
in Japanese and it's subtitled. And it has these panel moments where 6 people who are outside of the show comment on the show and the stuff that just happened in that episode. Well, apparently, for all 3 of the series that they've done on Netflix, they have an additional audio track that has their live reactions as they're watching the actual bits of the show in between them talking. So if you speak Japanese, you actually get that's another little bit of commentary you can get out of this reality show.
Interesting.
It's really neat. If you haven't checked it out, Terrace.
So the panel bits are all in English.
No, they're all in Japanese.
Okay.
Well, but there's subtitles. It's subtitled.
Well, how do you subtitle a secondary audio track?
You don't. That's what I'm saying. If you speak Japanese.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Because
the
subtitles are only in the main portion of the show.
Got it.
So there you go.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad they've opened some new doors. Avengers Infinity War is coming out April 27th, and the last of the big trailers is out. Can you name all the stars?
Tom, I cannot, because I've not seen this one, nor have I seen the previous trailer, nor will I on purpose watch any of the trailers.
Oh, right. You're being one of those people.
Well, no. One of those people makes a big deal about it. I'm just somebody who has not decided to seek it out. I will not.
I mean, I don't know.
I will not close my eyes if I'm at the movie theater and it comes on. I'm just not going to seek it out.
We can report that Brian's eyes are still open.
Yes, correct.
How are you feeling about it, though? Granted, you are shirking your duties as a Cord Killers host and not watching the trailers for your own personal gain. But, you know, I don't want to make a big deal out of it.
I mean, it sounds like he's going to put on that glove, man. You got all them rocks. He's going to put it on the glove. He's going to look like Michael Jackson. It's going to be amazing.
Let me tell you, Brian, I won't spoil anything. I won't give you the trailer. It definitely has me excited. That's all I'll say.
My one worry about it is because the one thing I've heard that's a big deal is how many different characters there are. It's possible that there such a thing as too many characters in one show, Tom?
Well, I want to approach this rationally and say you can have too many characters and handle them badly. You can have too many characters and handle them well. Lord of the Rings had a crap load of characters.
That's true.
They handled it well. Other shows can have fewer characters than that and not handle it well. So it's Yeah, it's a higher difficulty level to have this many characters. There's
I like that. It's a difficulty multiplier. That means if they stick the landing, they'll get all the more points for the gold medal.
Yeah, exactly. So keep your eye on that East German judge and say, there is no East Germany anymore, ma'am. Please
and it, go home. It turns out she goes, aha, I am a counterpart.
All right. Hulu has reportedly outbid the competition for a new limited series produced by Reese Witherspoon's Hello Sunshine outfit. They're the same folks who produced Big Little Lies for HBO. The series is based on the book Little Fires Everywhere by Celeste Ng and stars Witherspoon and Kerry Washington. So Hulu throwing down some fat stacks to get what they hope is high quality programming.
I'll tell you what, Hulu is better and better. After 10, 15 years of this, I think I almost called him Fulu. They stopped being Fulu and they finally become Hulu. I'm very excited.
They become Yes Lou.
Acting the Fulu.
Stop acting the Fulu. Yeah, Reese Witherspoon's Big Little Lies was an award winner. It did great for HBO. This book was a bestseller. Kerry Washington's great. So, I mean, all the pieces are in place for Hulu to have their next big hit potentially be this. Handmaid's Tale sort of being the only one that I think everyone agrees, even if you don't like it, everyone agrees, oh yeah, that's a huge hit for Hulu. Everything else they've done is arguable at this point.
Yeah, except for Future Man. Everyone knows that Future Man is great. if they're going to be my friend.
I mean, if you don't want to be Brian's friend, you can say it's arguable. But personally, I'm Brian's friend. So let's talk about how MarketWatch says Netflix is developing a news magazine program along the lines of 60 Minutes in 2020. Netflix is supposedly proceeding with caution because they're trying to find an economical approach without compromising the integrity of the news gathering.
Now, what does that mean?
That means 60 Minutes is freaking expensive.
Right.
And CBS basically does it as a loss leader because it grabs headlines sometimes and drives people to watch CBS.
I wonder if there's does 60 Minutes or 2020 have a reputation as being overtly left-leaning or right-leaning or any of that stuff in a world where the news itself has become so politicized?
2009 Tom says 60 Minutes is considered fairly objective. 2018 Tom is like, I don't know. People think a cat sneezing is left-leaning these days. So who knows? Okay.
So I wonder if there's any kind of specific tactics that they're going to use in order to keep from looking like they're saying, leaning one way or the other.
Well, you know, I mean, CBS definitely has a reputation of being a little bit left-leaning over history, like all the way back to the Cronkite days. So what I would say is Netflix could steer a little bit right and find a niche. And it sounds a little bit from the little bit that has been released about this, that might be what they're doing. We're not talking Breitbart, right? You know, we're just, you're not even talking Fox News, right? Probably just more like to the right of CNN. That may not be true at all. That might just be something I'm picking up. The more interesting question, I think, is can they put the money into this to get the quality of journalists they need to be able to make it compelling? And will that work for their particular calculus? We spent the beginning of the show talking about how, hey, Amazon doesn't care about ratings. They care about how much cost per acquisition was this to get somebody to start buying stuff for a store. Netflix has their own version of that. And they're basically trying to balance those numbers, probably with a few producers saying, this is the minimum we think we can do to get the people we need to make a high quality show that will bring people in. Do you think it will bring enough people in?
It's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that, Tom.
I don't either. It doesn't sound like Netflix has the answer for it yet.
Netflix
either.
Pipes in like, hi, Ted Netflix here. We don't know either.
Oh, that's funny because Ted Sarandos, yeah. Ted Netflix. I like it.
Stumbled into that one.
All right. Let's talk about what we're watching. I was able to watch a couple of movies that I've been wanting to watch for a long time this weekend because I finally was home. I feel like even though there's more TV than ever, TV fatigue has finally hit me, Brian. And I'm just like, you know what? I don't want to try to keep up with everything I want to watch. Some things I want to watch, I'm just not going to watch. And so we watched a movie on Friday night and Sunday night.
It's kind of fun to unplug, he said, ironically, given the show that he hosts.
Well, also, you had a different reason for unplugging.
Well,
this
yes. Not only did I get food poisoning, but I got food poisoning leading up to a weekend where I had to shoot. We had out-of-town guests for both a full night of Scam School and 2 full days of Modern Rogue shooting. So Scam School, I was full on. I was physically there. It's the first time, get this, Tom, first time in 10 years that we shot 4 episodes in which I'm holding water. I don't drink one beer during any of Scam School.
Wow.
So apparently it is possible.
I'm surprised you're standing today after going through that. Well, thankfully, I was not in that situation. We watched Sicario. My wife wanted to watch it because there is another movie coming out in that universe. It's not by Villeneuve, but it will star Benicio del Toro and Thanos.
and his glove.
And his glove.
With those rocks.
Yeah, Sicario is great. It is the best art action film I've ever seen. Just crazy good.
I love
the way Villeneuve lets scenes breathe like he did in Blade Runner, for instance. Imagine that in a drug fighting story cross-border with Mexico.
You know what? That is one of the only criticisms I've heard about Blade Runner 2049. Is that what it is? Well, mm-hmm. I forget what year. 2049 is that people are like, it's too long, but I love the world so much. I just enjoyed soaking it all in. I don't know that I'm going to love the world of drug smuggling so much that I want to soak it all in, but it sounds like you did.
Well, because it's I think the difference is in Blade Runner, the scene breathing was showing you the world. He doesn't need to show you. He doesn't spend as long like showing you El Paso or Juarez. It's we're going to use this time to just show the consternation on in this case, it's Emily Blunt's character. And really, to me, it worked. I never felt bored. I felt enthralled in a way that some movies that treat this subject are like, let's just move to the action. And I feel lost. Like this felt like it was a very good balance of that. What was the other Denis Villeneuve movie that he made his name with? It was Sicario. Oh, Arrival. I felt a lot of that same kind of pacing where things move slow, but they feel like they should.
Right on. Well, then I will give it a try. How did you watch it and what did you think of that way?
We watched it on Fandango Now because my wife works there. So that's not a terribly interesting answer. I apologize. Call Me By Your Name. Well, wait a minute. Did we watch that? No, actually, we watched Call Me By Your Name on Fandango Now. We watched Sicario on Amazon Prime Video.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. Call Me By Your Name was the other one we watched last night. This is a really good movie that I wish I liked more, maybe.
You know what's perfect. Funny is I've not seen the movie. All I've heard is what you just did is a synthesis of all the reactions I've heard about this movie.
I was never bored.
Yeah.
I never rolled my eyes. I had several moments where I'm like, oh, that's a beautiful scene. That is an excellent stretch of dialogue. What a wonderful way to treat that subject in 1983 in Italy. At the end, though, I didn't rave. I didn't jump up out of my seat. Now, I don't know. Maybe it's a fault in me.
It's also a very indulgent movie, and I think that makes it weird to luxuriate in. You know, it's like a step beyond a guilty pleasure. There's something salacious about it, whether it's the age subject where the younger boy is... not necessarily supposed to be 18 to
17. He is
17. To a very depicted moment with a piece of fruit.
Yeah.
It's indulgent in those ways. And
it was never graphic though.
No.
If people are worried about that, it's all, but it's mostly done by suggestion. It's, you know, it's not a porn film or anything like that.
Right.
But Armie Hammer also looks much older than I think he's supposed to.
Right. I think he's supposed to be 20.
Yeah. I think they're only
29?
Supposed to be a few years between the two characters. And I don't
but
know.
But it doesn't Armie read just, that way.
He looks like he could be 20 or 50. I don't know.
It's J.K. Simmons. You're like, what is going on?
Yeah. But all that said, I'd recommend people watching it if the premise sounds good at all, which the premise is a visiting American archaeologist studying under a professor from Italy comes and spends 6 weeks in the summer at the professor's house and sort of has a dalliance with the professor's 17-year-old son.
Yeah, it's a good romantic movie.
Yeah, it is.
It's a good bit of drama.
For sure. All right. Let's see what we're on the lookout for.
Hey, we got a letter from Cliff. He writes, "Hey, Tom, Brian, and Bryce. I've been watching The Tunnel, which is on its second season on PBS. It's actually a remake of a Swedish show of the same name. It's about a homicide investigation that happens exactly halfway through the Channel Tunnel, aka the Channel, between Great Britain and France. The dead body is discovered when in a maintenance tunnel straddling the border, and when they go to move the deceased, they discover the body has been sawed in half, so that half the body is in Great Britain and half is in France. The two countries' police departments decide to jointly investigate the crime. It's a very compelling mystery and has several memorable characters. The lead female French detective has a mild form of autism where the main symptom is that she has no social skills." So that seems like an interesting extra character trait. The show is very similar to the show The Bridge, which you may have seen on FX a few years ago. This show and that were both based on the same previously mentioned Swedish show. The first two seasons are now streaming on Amazon Prime Video. It is well worth checking out if you like a good mystery and or police procedural. Thank you, Cliff.
I loved Utopia Season 1, but apparently not enough to watch Utopia Season 2.
Well, it made it hard to get, to be fair.
Correct. But that's actually a ringing endorsement. And just between us girls, how about that scene bearing a strong resemblance to something that we all just watched this week?
I was just curious if Justin Marks has ever seen The Tunnel. Well, I'll say I have this weird thing with this kind of logistics around a show where it's generally often Swedish, but maybe just a Scandinavian show that gets remade and it's a great, interesting premise. I end up having paralysis where I'm like, but I want to watch the original first before I start the English version. And then I never watch either one of them.
I don't know if that's your fault or the Swedes' fault. Can we blame
Swedes?
It's
all my fault.
Okay.
You know what? Sure.
You know what else is all your fault? Pilot X. Your fault.
Pilot X is, well, I mean, I didn't write the cover. I didn't voice the audiobook. I didn't edit it. I didn't publish it.
Yeah,
but it's mostly my fault.
But you know what? There's a proximate cause at the very beginning, and it all leads back to you.
Listen, I am very glad that Pilot X was funded on Inkshares and I was able to take advantage of all those other people to make it happen. So I would like to commit that crime again. Please.
You hear that? Unrepentant, this one. No, yeah, basically
no,
we want to.
If you liked Pilot X, you could still buy it. It's still available. In fact, I still get orders for it, which is great. I've got a sequel in the works called Trigger, which picks up Pilot X's story shortly after the last thing that he does in his subjective timeline in the book Pilot X. And I'm funding it now on Inkshares. So here's what I need. 750 pre-orders. If one of you would like to make 706 pre-orders right now, we're done. But if 706 of you each order one, that works too. I've got 90 days to do it. If we could get triggered to 750 pre-orders, then Inkshares will do all their magic to make the audiobook, which Audible is already like, yeah, bring it. We loved Pilot X. We'd like more from that. And so there will be an audiobook. It'll be in bookstores. It'll have the whole treatment, great cover, all of that. I just need to get the pre-orders from people who really loved Pilot X. So if you loved Pilot X or if you think you would love Pilot X and you want more, please back Trigger at inkshares.com. That's T-R-I-G-O-R.
If you're Brian Brushwood, who is only interested in making sure that another high-quality audiobook gets made, should I do the e-reader, the reader, or the super reader option?
I just need units, so e-reader's fine.
Oh, great. All right, here, I'm booking it right now, so you're going to have to talk while I'm doing this.
Yeah, I'm actually curious, Brian, since you actually read Pilot X,
yep.
if there was anything you remembered from that story that you were like, oh, well, I wonder about that. Is that going to still be around? What is he going to do with that? If there's anything like that.
Yeah, well, yes, certainly. Like the very last scene leaves it open to, without spoiling anything, there's an interesting new place to explore. And I want to know about the relationship. I read the tagline, and I think I know what you're hinting at. There's really two characters by the end of Pilot X, and they've been through a lot together. One of them is, I guess, human or whatever race Pilot X is.
London, yeah.
The other is an artificial construct allowed to become interesting in ways that most of them don't. And if this is concerning their future relationship, then I'm very much interested to see where it goes.
Well, it's definitely going to start with a very depressed, guilt-ridden Alendon and his timeship trying to jolt him out of it.
Well, this is great. I believe I just pre-ordered it, and excellent. There it is. It's easy. And by the way, it doesn't even charge you. It just says it's gonna charge you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So that's
just
easy.
Just make sure as long as you have an account set up, you're all good. So please check it out. Inkshares.com/books/TRIGOR. Let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Moving past CEO Mitch Lowe. Finally walked back the comments he made last week about tracking you while you drive home with the MoviePass app. He said in an interview with Variety, "I said something completely inaccurate as far as what we are doing. We only locate customers when they use the app." Lowe also posted an apology to MoviePass customers on the company's website and updated the privacy FAQ.
Probably a smart move. Unrelated to this one, in a totally different direction. Remember when we told you Netflix was testing using virtual patches to reward kids for watching kid stuff on Netflix? Netflix now says we've concluded the test for patches and decided not to move forward with the feature for kids. So in other words, we're renaming Cord Killers to This Week in Whoops.
Yeah, basically two stories that caused a lot of reaction among our audience have now been overruled. I have a feeling what Mitch Lowe did was waited until he's like, and you all can assure me that we are not tracking people. And like, let's update the iOS app, be sure. Okay. And then boom. And Netflix was like, oh, yeah, no, people think this is a horrible idea. Let's not do it. Okay, great. Thanks. Fandango Now, the store that used to be called MGo, has joined Movies Anywhere, becoming the second service after Vudu that was in Ultraviolet that is now in Movies Anywhere, which used to be Disney Movies Anywhere. So pretty much all the major stores are in there now. We're just waiting on Paramount and Lionsgate, the two big studios, to join up. And pretty much every movie you buy will be available across all your apps.
What a long journey it's been to get here. Like from the original promise of Ultraviolet that we reported, what, nearly a decade ago at the very beginning? That's crazy.
It was, isn't that crazy?
Disney's created a new division for streaming video, which will be headed by Kevin Mayer, the company's chief strategy officer. The division will oversee ESPN Plus and the family-oriented streaming service coming from Disney in 2019. Media networks and the movie studios will remain separate units.
I can't tell if I think this is a good or a bad idea. I often think it's bad when companies kind of cordon off their digital effort into a separate arena. I feel like they should just be approaching these as if they are extensions of their existing brands.
I disagree. I love it because
they generally fail when they do that. That's why I don't like it.
Well, some part of them fail, but that's the way it should be. For example, if Sony back in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, if they had a unified strategy, then Sony Digital wouldn't be releasing things as they wouldn't be making MP3 players while they were also trying to DRM MP3 sharing. And so I like the fact now you could say,
those are okay. Go ahead.
Well, okay. What I like about it is you get more interesting artifacts when one wing can act independent of another, and you don't have to be beholden. Because the reverse of that, and again, here's another late 90s example for you. A friend of mine was working for Warner Brothers when they got bought by AOL, and as part of a unified strategy, everyone had to give up Outlook and start using AOL mail. Like, that's... I like the idea of fragmentation. I like the idea of balkanization within a company, as long as you're all working, you know, for profitability and each... It seems to me like what you want is a bunch of sub-empires, each one trying to make the very best thing that they can, independent from each other. And when it makes sense for the two of them to work together under the same umbrella, you should. But I don't think you should force it just because you all have the Disney label over it.
No, I agree with everything you said. Sony Music being separate from Sony Electronics is a good example of when you should divide them. What I'm thinking of is ESPN Plus should be in a separate building from ESPN. I don't think that works. And Fox did this in the late 1990s. NBC did this in the late 1990s. Freaking Tech TV did this and tried to separate its website from its television network, even though it wasn't even that big. That is too much separation. I look at this and I say, oh, Disney, the streaming app, ESPN Plus, the streaming app, are just another channel. You wouldn't take ESPN2 or ESPN News and say, we're separating it into an entirely different division. That doesn't make sense because there's too much synergy with regular ESPN. This is on the border. I feel like generally when you take a product and say, oh, because it's being streamed over the internet, it's now an entirely different division, doesn't always work out.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. But and this is that perfect dividing line. It's a bit of a Rorschach test. But of course, we're on the outside anyway. So yeah. Provisionally, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt.
NBC News plans to launch a streaming service this year in order to reach younger viewers. The company has not decided if it will be subscription-based or not. CBS News and ABC News both have free streaming news apps. And Fox News announced a paid streaming service coming. So people are trying it different ways.
You know, NBC might be in a particularly good position to do that because the fact that given all the news apps that have... I'm gonna walk that back. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they play. I'll see if I can pronounce this right. Ava DuVernay, Selma, Wrinkle in Time, will direct the film adaptation of DC's New Gods series. The series follows an eternal war between twin planets, the New Genesis, ruled by the High Father, and Apocalypse, ruled by Darkseid.
Wow, you are a Marvel guy.
That's a yep. Superman,
Bateman,
the Floosh,
Wonder Woman. What? So Ava DuVernay gonna do a DC because DC's like, huh? Patty Jenkins did our only really popular superhero movie. Let's try Ava DuVernay, see if that works too. So that will be interesting. All right, let's get to the dispatches from the front.
Man, lots of good one this week, Tom. As a matter of fact, every single one made it into the doc. I don't know that we have time for all of them, but they're great.
Evan, the cord agnostic, wrote about why he is using DirecTV. Basically, he got free unlimited cell phone, he got UVerse internet as the fastest option with no cap, and HBO for life. And less than a week after he got an email offering to downgrade his package and save $12 a month, he called up and said, okay, I want to do that. And now he's paying even less because he got rid of ESPN.
Yeah, we got a similar offer or similar thing from Amar saying, hey, killers, I've been.
Further down.
We'll do this one. Okay. Yeah. From Amar, he says, hey, killers, been comparing the TV quality of our upstairs 40-inch or so Insignia Roku TV and our 55-inch Sharp Stupid Smart TV. I hope that's not the actual
marketed
name. I
don't think that's the actual brand name. No.
Which we have hooked up to a Roku Express Plus. Turns out the Roku TV's quality is really good. Sometimes I can't tell the difference between Sling TV and over the air if it's streaming at the highest quality. It's a different story with the 55-inch, however. I blame the Express Plus because I've noticed that even with apps like Amazon Prime Video, when compared with our PS3, which is also connected to the 55-inch, the PS3 seems to have the better quality. Love your show. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much, Amar.
Yeah, man, there's so many things that can affect that that are outside of the device, but it could also be the device. Whatever works for you, man. That's what's good. Colin from lovely Cleveland said, hey, Tom asked about what Spectrum might be doing in regards to streaming. I'm a Spectrum internet customer, and I got a mailer in my mailbox for a $22 a month streaming service that lets you pick 10 channels from a list of 50. Looks really compelling on the surface, but the fine print's worrying. It mentions credits on your monthly bill, as well as taxes, fees, and surcharges. And knowing Spectrum, I doubt this will be as easy to change or cancel as something like Sling TV.
So his question is this a bold new entry to streaming or another boring Me Too service? I think your instincts were 100% right. You should be wary of the word Spectrum.
Yeah, basically it sounds like they're test marketing. This is very similar to what Time Warner Cable was doing, which is now Spectrum, previously, where they would test market these skinny bundles and give you selections. If they keep it test market, if they keep it a small enough offering, then they don't have to worry about upsetting their channel carriage agreement. Whether they can actually turn this into a broad service or not is interesting. The fact that it's $22 a month, not $19.95, tells me this is a test.
Yeah. Mike Bose, who's been watching us since the frame rate days, says he was giving some thought to the many iterations of Amazon's video service, and he realized that nobody's done a proper write-up of its many brand changes. So he wrote an article, The Forgotten History of Amazon Video, posted on Medium and his personal site, maddogmovies.com. Thought we might enjoy it. This is fantastic, man.
Yeah, I forgot that Amazon Unbox was the original video service from Amazon where everything had to be downloaded using an Amazon downloader.
Oh, that's right. You had to install it on your desktop. Oh, man, that was wild.
And so it is now Prime Video. Whenever I say Amazon Prime Video, I'm overdoing it. It's just Prime Video. This is a really good article. Well done, Mike. And then Steven wrote in to point out that I said Fox was targeting reducing their ad load by 2 minutes an hour by 2020 last week. The story, which we had in our show notes, says that Fox will reduce their ad load to 2 minutes an hour by 2020. So thanks for catching that, Steve. That's a much bigger jump than just taking it down a couple minutes. Well, you're basically taking it down 15 minutes or more.
But that's to a level where at that point you're fundamentally altering the content, because a half hour of television, at least on, you know, we'll say cable reality television, is a half hour is 21 minutes of content.
They could extend it. Right. You know, they could do what HBO does and say, hey, let it be 55 minutes, 56 minutes, or they could consider internal promotions not to count as ads
or
do a lot of promotions.
You know, maybe even do, short stories, vignettes, you know, that unlocks the opportunity to do like a 7 minute, you know, after your content's over, you know, before the hour, there's always a 7 minute vignette or something, or a series of 7 minutes.
Fox executive Ed Davis told the Wall Street Journal the 2 minutes per hour is a real target for Fox and also our challenge for the industry. Creating a sustainable model for ad-supported storytelling will require us all to move.
Man, that seems drastic. It's also time for them to do that. There's a lot about the old model that is just ridiculous and is arcane and doesn't make sense.
Also, I wonder, the more I think about this, it's like 2 minutes of national commercials. They're probably going to keep a few minutes of local avails.
Oh, good call.
And local promos and then national promos. We're still probably talking at least 10 minutes of break time per hour.
Yeah. All right.
And maybe they move those ads outside of mid-rolls, keep them more at the edges.
Oh, yeah. That might not count if they put them
possibly
over the edge.
I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Folks, hold on. What if they did that, then they could open up like long form ads. Like if they freed up that space where you could buy a 4 minute ad block at the end of the hour.
They already do that for late night TV. You can get long 2 minute plus.
Yeah.
Ads.
Generally, those are less costly because nobody wants to do them because people tune out if it's too long.
Though that going back to that Wall Street Journal article, you know, they were saying that part of the reason they want to do this is to increase scarcity for those ads and bring the prices up. So maybe it's going to be closer to what they say.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, thank you, Stephen, for pointing that out. One little verbal typo makes all the difference in the analysis. Thank you, Brian Brushwood, for hosting this show with me.
Oh, thank you, Tom, for writing a sequel to my beloved Pilot X.
You're welcome.
I pre-ordered it.
The first chapter is readable free at Inkshares. Hey, our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which is also carried on diamondclub.tv. Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will hope you ordered Trigger next week.
Hey guys, Brian and Tom here, and it's just the same old message at the end of the credits, just like always.
That's right, Brian. Nothing new here except your name showing up.
Oh my gosh, I've got a name.
You just supported us on Patreon.
Yeah, all those $5 donors, look at that. That's your name in pixels. We're going to make you famous, kid. Put your
name
in pixels on the internet.
There's some classic names in there. But some of you are new. Some of you aren't there. It's sad. What can they do, Brian?
I mean, they could go to patreon.com/cordkillers and pledge $5 an episode to be one of these amazing people. Like this one.
Amazing.
Oh, look at that name right there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.